The United States cannot be the world's policeman, but it can advise, train, and equip friendly nations facing conflicts of their own. It's doing that right now in Iraq as that country fights against the militant group ISIS. It's doing that in Nigeria, where hundreds of schoolgirls remain missing. This type of defense aid will be pondered, debated, and questioned at an event later today hosted by the Cato Institute. Visiting research fellow Jennifer Keister is moderating the event, and she joins us now in a preview. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
So, Jennifer, first of all, you've put this under the umbrella of foreign internal defense. What is it, and how has the U.S. military used it of late?
Well, that's a good question. It actually, there is no sort of government-wide or academically accepted definition of foreign internal defense. Sort of at best, it's a basket of activities broadly aimed at what former Secretary Gates described as helping others defend themselves. So it includes a range of DOD operations, but also Department of State, USAID, DEA, and a number of other entities as well.
What sort of trends have you noticed in the administration overall and specifically in how the Pentagon has used this?
Well, it's become one of the reasons why we're hosting an event on it today is it's become an increasingly prominent suggestion in response to a range of events worldwide. So, for example, you know, Iraq is the most prominent at the moment, but you know, a couple that you mentioned, we've got Ukraine, the Syrian crisis, Nigeria, the Westgate Mall event last year in Kenya and northern Mali. So these are sort of supposedly smaller footprint types of operations with a sort of whole of government approach to both DOD and a number of other entities as well. So it's become an increasingly attractive option in an era of both sort of fiscal constraints and cooling domestic and international support politically for direct involvement.
And who has undertaken this? For example, a lot of the places that you've mentioned, you know, it's something where the special forces might take the lead. Is that who does this, or is this a mix of different agencies coming in to pull this off?
It's really a mix. I think the special forces, particularly, and the DOD especially, is sort of the easiest conceptually to think of as engaging in these types of activities. But a lot of the work on this, and even particularly within the DOD, a lot of folks will mention what they call a whole of government approach and specifically reference sort of partner or parallel efforts by state or USAID to do development work at the same time as a more military type of activity as well.
And where have we seen this work well?
That's a good question. That's something I'm hoping to get some of our folks at the panel today to talk about. So we've got a guy coming from James Story over at State who's been intensively involved in Plan Colombia and believes that's done very well. One of our other panelists, Sean McFate, has done some work as a military contractor, also former military, at rebuilding the Liberian Army, which he believes went well versus, you know, so bringing out, pulling from folks who have sort of direct experience and asking them to make a broader strategic assessment about why some of those went well versus other activities that they think didn't go quite as well, and whether that allows us to sort of expect and tell the difference up front between those that are a good opportunity for involvement versus those that might be a bit more of a risk.
Is there a glaring example of where the U.S. tried to do this type of foreign internal defense as opposed to, say, direct military involvement and it was a failure?
I think it's a hard question to answer, I think, in part because some of these activities are, again, not always terribly well defined. They're not always in the public eye. So some of them actually is quite difficult to get a decent amount of information about them. So as a, you know, an informed taxpayer or a researcher, this is actually a bit of an undertaking.
We're speaking with Jennifer Keister. She's a visiting research fellow at the Cato Institute, which is hosting an event today to discuss foreign internal defense. Now, you mentioned a couple of the people that you have talking about it. You have others from the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service and the Brookings Institute. Tell me about the range of views of the people who are coming and more broadly, the range of views on foreign internal defense. What are the top concerns and the top proponents of it?
So broadly speaking, and one of the reasons why I thought it was important to have an event is, again, it's sort of it's this seductively attractive middle ground between folks who are concerned about ongoing insecurity and global threats, but the sort of parallel rise of fiscal constraints and political constraints as well. So the sort of smaller footprint approach to sort of ongoing threats becomes a very attractive option. There actually hasn't been, at least to my view, much of a public debate, broadly speaking, in terms of, okay, well, what, you know, we talk about, you know, partner nations, about building capacity and that kind of thing. But what are the criteria? So how do we tell a good partner nation from one that's a bit more risky? How do we sort of identify good opportunities versus poorer ones? So we're bringing in some folks who, again, have some direct experience in some of these cases of foreign internal defense. I mentioned a couple of them. We've also got Dave Maxwell coming from Georgetown, who's previously a 30-year veteran of the U.S. Army and served in special forces and did work in the southern Philippines on our foreign internal defense efforts there. We've got Vanda Feldab Brown from Brookings, who's done written sort of widely on non-traditional security threats, including doing both writing and field research in a number of these areas. But for those who have direct experience or more expertise on particular cases, the question is, again, can we, rather than sort of getting bogged down in debating the pros and cons of sort of the historiography of a particular case, can we pull from that things that help us inform this broader strategic debate that I think needs to occur on what are good and, you know, sort of good and bad options, and how we should think about that in a strategic perspective rather than sort of going from crisis to crisis.
Seems like something for the Defense Department, for Congress to consider. What are your plans after holding this event? Do you plan to do anything more with this issue?
I think it'll be fun to kind of see what comes out of the event. I think, personally, I would like to pull together some policy suggestion pieces in terms of, you know, here's a good way to at least start thinking about the criteria. Again, I think it's very attractive to sort of talk about partner nations and sort of smaller footprint operations in a broad perspective. But at some point, you know, policymakers are going to have to make the hard decisions about, okay, do we accept option A? Do we accept option B? You know, the headlines keep coming, and all of these sort of suggestions for involvement with lower footprint come up. So at least taking a stab at getting the ball rolling on a public debate or policy suggestions about how to navigate that, because that's not an easy space for policymakers to navigate.
Jennifer Keister is a visiting research fellow at the Cato Institute. Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.